Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, Tony Gonzalez, and I had the ability, I should say the opportunity, to talk to Tony before I'm talking to you right now, and what a thoughtful guy. I mean, the best tight end in the NFL's history. The guy leads in catches, he leads in yards, he leads in everything, but what an incredible, thoughtful guy. It's a commercial free, and it's a good solid hour of life hacks and life-changing advice with Tony Gonzalez. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock. 267 million Facebook users had their names, IDs, phone numbers exposed, making them targets for spam, phishing, scams, and identity theft. You could miss identity threats if you're only monitoring your credit. Good thing there's LifeLock, which detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number out on the dark web. It's 2020, people. We need to protect our identity. Let's use LifeLock. You're online. You're purchasing things. You're ordering things. You're getting everything done online. And it's so convenient. Just like driving a car is convenient, but you need auto insurance. You got to protect yourself, and that's what LifeLock is. If you become a victim of identity theft, their U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it, but you won't because you'll have LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com and use promo code Adam for 25% off.
ACS fans, get it on. The NFL playoffs are here, and you know what that means. We're getting closer and closer to that final Sunday of the season. You've heard Adam rant about pass interference, ball spotting, and field goal posts on the podcast. But now's your chance to experience it live. When you sign up for the newsletter at CorollaNewsletter.com, you'll be automatically entered for a chance to win an all-expense-paid trip to Los Angeles to watch the last game of the season in the Carr Museum with Adam and friends. That's wings, barbecue, plenty of endless rant, and hey, it's Hollywood, so who knows who'll be there? So get to CorollaNewsletter.com today. You and a friend may be flying out to the city of homeless angels to hear Adam rant live about the spread Sal made him bet on. CorollaNewsletter.com, tonight!
Tony Gonzalez in studio. He is, well, let's just consider the best tight end that's ever played pro football. So says I, and so says the rest of America and all the football fans. Good to see you, Tony Gonzalez.
Thank you. Hey, good to see you, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. I've always been interested in you because I've interested in your career and some of the things you've done outside of football. The inside of football part, everyone's pretty aware of. Uh-huh. But I liked, I saw some little retrospectives and docs on you and lifestyle things and dietary things and, and just sort of general wellness things. And I've always been interested in that facet of your career.
You like the biohacking stuff?
I'd like to know about all that stuff.
Well, I'll tell you everything. Anything you want to know?
Well, first off, what is a biohack?
Well, you know, shortcutting shit, you know, trying like health-wise. How to get the most out of your body and your mind without putting that much effort into it, I guess. Like taking a little shortcut. Like, how can I give you an example of that? Sleep, I guess.
Right.
Biohacking sleep. Biohacking cognitive enhancement.
Well, like a biohack of sleep, and this is something I talked about with Jimmy Kimmel a million years ago, because if you could imagine, Jimmy and I kind of started doing morning radio, and you'd have to be there at like 4:30 in the morning. And sometimes we'd be working at night or doing something at night. And he said to me once, like, it's better to get 6 hours sleep than 6.5 hours sleep.
Yeah.
And you'd think, well, why? More sleep is better. But if you can hit your rhythm,
you'll
wake up more refreshed with less sleep.
Yeah.
So that's a kind of a shortcut biohack.
Absolutely. That's exactly one. And then how about with the, you know, when you're taking your coffee, using theanine with your coffee, 100 milligrams or whatever it is of that, and it'll help you not have the jitters. It'll help you have more cognitive enhancement, more focus, more whatever. So I'm in all that. Like using a sauna, infrared sauna is a big part of my routine. I use that. I did it today, this morning, before I came over here.
Well, good. Let's talk about that. I sadly have just a sauna, not an infrared sauna. Mm-hmm. Why is an infrared is it's a deeper
type of
penetration.
It
right?
penetrates. It's not as miserable for me. A regular sauna is 180 degrees plus.
Right.
Infrared sauna is a little bit lower temperature, but it penetrates it from like 6 to 7 inches deep into your body. It's good for your heart. It's good for your skin. It helps you sleep better. Anti-aging, like all these different things, stress. So I like doing it daily.
What I do daily, everyone who listens to me knows, I do the cold water plunge every day.
I have one of those in the house too.
Tell me about that.
I love that. You know about your vagus nerve. If you go completely under, what that does for you cognitively. But, you know, I read all this stuff, and half of it I don't remember. I just know that experts out there say it's good for me, so I'll try it out. And, and if it becomes part of my routine after a couple of weeks or a month or two, then I'll keep doing it. A lot of the stuff, I move on from it.
What is the temperature of your cold water tub?
I'm at 57 degrees.
Pussy.
I know.
My pool's 49.
Is it 49? That's tough to do.
I'm in the foothills, man. Oh. It's cold up there.
You take cold showers too and all that stuff?
I will if the pool's too warm.
Uh-huh.
But I will tell you guys, it's funny because I have this sort of digital iPad-y kind of readout, and if you press the pool, it'll tell you the outside temperature and, you know, the ambient temperature. It'll say it's 46 degrees outside and the pool's 50. Uh-huh. So you'll know. And you know the difference. You can feel the difference between 44 degrees and 49 degrees in that pool. It's all painful, but it's a little bit more. But I'm telling you, the cold water plunge, it's so good.
I love it. I love it. You know, I went up, you know, Laird Hamilton?
Sure.
Big wave surfer. So he invited me. He does these. You got to go up there. If you ever want to challenge yourself, go do one of the workouts at his house.
Yeah.
I went up there. He invited me, and he's got this whole pool. And he's got infrared saunas by the pool. He's got regular saunas. And then he has the cold where he puts the ice in the ice tub, which obviously as an ex-athlete, I was a pussy. I never liked doing that stuff.
Right.
But I went up there and he's like, yeah, get in there. And they filled it all. I mean, it's pretty much ice and a little bit of water. And it's, I don't know how cold. That's got to be colder than 40. That's 30 something degrees.
Yeah. What is ice water, Maxipata? It's got to be somewhere between the mid 30s and the low 40s, I'm assuming. But either way, see, to me, we're talking about the physiological benefits of all that we're discussing. But I also feel like there's a psychological benefit to it, which is I am two things. Like I used to say to people, they'd talk about therapy, you know, and they'd go, well, what do you learn in therapy, or what's good about therapy, or how's therapy work? And I go, simply engaging in therapy is therapeutic. Saying once a week, I'm going to carve out an hour and a half or 2 hours or whatever it is, to go somewhere and sit down and work on myself psychologically and emotionally. Like just the idea that I've decided to do this is helpful.
Yeah.
And just the idea that you're engaging in this behavior is super helpful. It means you're tuned into yourself. You're trying to better yourself. And then there's the secondary part, which is the sauna's hot as shit and the cold plunge is cold as shit and you're rich. And you don't have to do it, but you're doing it anyway.
Uh-huh. It's kind of like making yourself uncomfortable, which is the best time. That's how you grow.
Right.
You're never going to get better by not sitting there and taking the hits and doing it willingly.
You're imposing it on yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I'm all about that. I will do I started meditating. I've been doing visualization. Obviously, when I played sports, I believe every great athlete has some type of visualization exercise, whether he knows it or she knows it or not. But then when I got done playing, I really got into meditation and then Wim Hof breathing, which is uncomfortable. I don't know if anybody's ever done that. Have you ever done that?
Yeah.
I liked it. I don't do it that much.
It's a little bit of a hyperventilation. 50 to 59 ice bath? How can an ice tub be warmer than my swimming pool? That's the question. Yeah, you
keep
yourself.
Adding ice to keep the temperature around 55. These are pro athletes.
Really? Yeah. Either way, your balls are going to hurt. And I may not have a big dick, but I got plenty of balls.
Well, when you get out of that thing, nobody's got a big
they're
dick.
They're all the landing gears and the fuselage. So you're a great athlete and a great gifted athlete. And then I think what gets you – so there are a lot of guys out there – you know, like if you go back in the day, you take a guy like Hollywood Henderson. He was a great athlete. He played for the Dallas Cowboys. I think he did a pick six and took one to the house in the Super Bowl and blah, blah, blah. The guy was a very colorful guy who was a little bit of a Lawrence Taylor, maybe a little bit before Lawrence Taylor, but he had no work ethic. Uh-huh. He was a head case and he, you know, played a few years in the league because your natural ability will let you hang around in the league for a few years.
Yeah.
But if you have a bad work ethic and a 10-cent head, eventually you're gone. When you have a great physicality and an insane work ethic, then you become Tony Gonzalez or Jerry Rice. Now you've taken the two things and you've kind of put them together.
Yeah.
But usually the problem with the guys that have the amazing physicality is they sort of become like hot blondes in high school. Like, why study?
Yeah.
I don't need to hit the books. I'm having a good time.
Yeah.
So how do we take the guy who's sort of the physical specimen and you're – what size shoe do you wear?
16.
And you have big hands and you're, what, 6'4", 6'5"?
6'5".
6'5". You're a gifted athlete. How do you instill the work ethic in the gifted athlete?
Well, because you get away with your athleticism, like you said, when you're a kid. I never, you know, I don't think I worked that hard when I was younger. It's just I was going to go out there and kick your ass because I'm bigger and stronger and faster than you. But when you get to the NFL or any professional rank, one thing I always told rookies when they came in is welcome to the world of you're no longer special. It's like, oh, you run a 4.4. Oh, great, great. So does he, and so does he. It's like, oh, you bench 500 pounds. Good for you. So does that guy, and that guy was all – he's all American, too, just like you. So you're no better than us now. What separates you now is your mental and how you connect your brain to your heart. How can you get that to coexist with each other? And sometimes it takes a while to figure that out because I was no stronger, no faster, no smarter than I was after my rookie year. But what changed for me was I don't know if you know this story about me, but I led the NFL in drop passes and got benched twice my second year in the league and got booed by the home crowd, got written up in the papers that I'm a bust and all that shit. And I went through a little bit of a depression, you know, started drinking, started making bad decisions because I was depressed. I was hurt inside. Right. And so that's where things really changed for me. When I went through that shit experience, I started reading because of it, and I'd never read before. And I started educating myself on all things because I knew that I never wanted to feel how I felt before. After I went through the shit, wallowed there for a little while, felt sorry for myself. I came out of it because my brother gave me a book by Vince Lombardi, a little book of quotes. And then off of that, I went and got Vince Lombardi's book. And then off of that, I started reading about Pat Riley. I started reading about Michael Jordan. I started reading about Phil Jackson. I started reading about, okay, this is what it takes to be great. This is why people are so great. And it's all because of the way they think. That's what separates all of us. It's the successful people in life. It has nothing to do to me. You know, you have your natural talent and you go towards that direction. But then if you want to be great at it, it's about how you talk to yourself daily by second. I mean, do I have this? Am I good enough? Can I accomplish this shit? Am I badass? The guys that are the best that I've ever played with, the one consistent thing is that they have no doubt when they step on the field, it's like I'm the baddest motherfucker walking in here and I'm gonna win. Every ball that's thrown to me, I'm gonna catch. Not like don't drop it. But that's how I used to think. Now it was I got this fucking ball and when it's in the air, there's nothing you can do to stop me. Nothing.
But
and
most,
that's the attitude you try to get to.
Sure. Most people have a sort of a spiral, like they go positive or negative. And when you drop a bunch of balls and you get benched and it's your second year, so the jury's kind of out, or maybe the jury's in, maybe you don't have hands, and you go back and you start drinking a little, most people drink more.
Yeah.
They go further down that road. They don't have a correction mode. They can't correct. Yeah. I can't tell you, and you know, and you've been around it from sports. Like, how many times has somebody said to somebody, hey, you got to fix this thing, and you got to fix it fast, otherwise you're going to be gone. Like, hey, employee, you got a problem. You're late too often. You need to focus on that. And they're late the next day.
Yeah.
Like, they just don't have the ability. How many coaches have you heard say to a player, you need to fix this thing? And they actually, some people will double down on the behavior as a weird defiance disorder or something. Yeah. Like, you can't talk to me. And then they're out of the league. I mean, how many guys in a league where everyone has ability, obviously, you don't make that roster. You don't get invited there. You don't get drafted if you don't have crazy ability. It's all about the head. The body's a given because you wouldn't be there if you couldn't hack it. How many? What is that self-destruct, and how many times have you seen it?
Yearly.
Yearly.
All the time. Every year. The league's loaded with guys. There are so many guys that you look at and you go, you should be a Pro Bowler. You should be an All-Star.
Right.
You're squandering millions of dollars because you can't figure this out. And a lot of guys don't. You're right about that, but I think it's all about who you hang out with. I don't know how guys, everybody's got a, you know, their stories on who they grew up with. I don't know what happened with when they were kids. But for me, I knew my mom and my older brother, Chris, they were big impacts on me to say, you know, you need no people in your life too. A lot of guys in the league and in show business, I'm sure you've seen it. They got guys around them that will tell them, yeah, it's okay. Yeah. Where I had some no people in my life saying, look, you're not as cool as you think you are. You had 100 yards today. I saw you miss five blocks. I saw you, what happened in the fourth quarter on that one play or whatever. And so, and I believe them and I trusted them too. And that's where a lot of guys, they can't trust the opinions of others, or they just won't listen for whatever reason. And I don't know why. That's what I've come to the conclusion, because I don't understand it sometimes.
But you've seen so many people self-destruct and squander so many millions of dollars. And in a way, when we're talking about what I see guys that are funny and have potential, but they don't know how to practice or work out or they piss off the wrong people or whatever. But it's sort of nickels and dimes. You see people who are dealing with millions of dollars who don't have the potential to do anything else, flame out at 24 and a half because they won't listen to what the coach is saying, or they won't work on this technique or that technique for this very small window in time.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of it too, I think, you know, there's a thing called the transformative power of crisis. And for me, that was my crisis that second year, getting benched. I'd never been benched before. I was always a stud. I was a first-round draft choice. Like, it came easy for me. And then once I hit that shit time, like, it hurt. It really hurt me badly. I was crying. I was in tears at night, drinking. I remember Jack and Cokes, locking the door and just drinking, like, 8-10 of them before I'd go to bed at night during the football season, because I was in this. And then, of course, you just keep spiraling. That doesn't help you. Now you do have a shitty practice. And so I hit that rock bottom. And so it was scary for me, like, to say, like, I never want to feel like that again. And I never will. I vowed I'm going to go down swinging, and I'm going to listen too. You have to humble yourself and say, obviously, the way I've been doing it hasn't been working. I think that's the best, whatever belief system you have. I mean, and I'm talking religion or whatever, stoicism, philosophy for living. Just look in the mirror and say to yourself, how's that working out for you? Just look and just say, how's it working for you? Are you thriving? Are you where you want to be? Are you kicking ass? You got the girls? Are you going to the front of the line at the club? This is all the important stuff back then. Right. Are you getting paid the millions of dollars? Are you signing that car? Are you going to the Pro Bowl? And all those questions were no for me. And I'm like, well, I got to change this shit. And that's why I went out. And that's why success leaves clues. I'm a big believer in that. And just go read about it. I can read. You've seen it. People in show business that hit that rock bottom, bounce back. What did they do to get there? Why was Michael Jordan so good? If there's other guys out there just as tall, just as can jump 40 inches, can do all the same stuff. But why was he so good? And that's what I'm obsessed with.
Well, it's interesting now. There's so many examples and so much information. You know, I think in the past you could have said, well, you take something like diet. You just didn't know. You had the government pyramid. You know, it's the 50s or the 70s. You don't have access. access to what you've been talking about. There's no Laird Hamilton's house in Malibu and a cold dip. It's just you got the government pyramid. You go to school. They feed you. All the info's out there now. People, there's some people that just gobble it up. Like you are like a burner in a old steam train that we're just shoveling information into, and you're burning it up, and we're shoveling. You have to keep shoveling this coal, this information coal into you. And then there are other people, like that door's shut, it's locked, there's no fire there.
Yeah.
And if you try to get a little coal in there, they'll fight you on it. And I'm starting to realize that as technology speeds up and as the world speeds up and as the information flows, there are going to be people like you and Laird or, you know, Joe Rogan or whoever who are going to speed up. They want more. They can't be satiated. And you're going to see, you know, you're going to see these people every few years and they're going to be different people. They're going to know so much more. They're going to have done so much more. They're going to have so many more experiences under the belt. And then other people are just digging in and going even deeper into this whole of no information, no improvement, set in my ways. It doesn't make sense to guys like you and me who are like, we got to make hay while the sun shines, man. I wish I knew this shit 20 years ago. I wish someone had shared this with me. But it doesn't make sense when you're walking around going, I wish somebody had shared this with me. And then you say to somebody, now I'm going to share it with you. And they go, fuck off.
That's true. That's true.
Most people don't want this.
Yeah, it's like raising, it's like little kids.
Right.
It's like I have four children, and it's just like raising kids, and you're saying to yourself, why won't you listen? Like, you know, you're crushing yourself. That's the only person. Go look in the mirror. It's that analytical mind that some people can't shut off too. And I'm a believer. I really am a believer to a fault. Meaning, but also I have, I think, common sense, and the one question, just how is it working out for you? So if you tell me, hey, if you run up this hill 15 times and you catch 1,000 balls and you lift this weight, you'll be a first team all pro. I'm going to be like, all right, really? I'll do it. I didn't do that my first 2 years in the NFL though. I was trying to do it my way. And that's what I said. Like, just listen to the people that have gone before you. It really is that simple. It really is that simple.
You say, like, how's it working out? I've always sort of couched it this way, which is, how is this thing serving you? Like, you know, there's those people who go, hey, man, I'll get in someone's face and I'll tell them what I think. And sometimes they don't like it. But I go, how's that serving you? Why? Yeah. You've been fired from your last seven jobs because you keep getting in people's faces and sharing your truth with them. Like, it's not serving you.
Yeah.
So treat your life like this gin rummy hand, which I don't really know how to play gin rummy, but what it is you get a card that you need and you go, okay, that's a good card. And then you go, here's a card I don't need. I'm going to discard that card. And eventually you build this great hand of good cards. And we all have cards that work for us. And then some things we need to discard. Let it go. Don't hang on to it with both hands. Yeah. Build a stronger hand.
Yeah.
You have probably made a life where you've had qualities that were positive, that worked, that served you, and you went, let's enhance those. Let's work on those more. And then there's some qualities that don't serve you, and you go, let's see if we can discard those.
Yeah.
And we'll replace them with a better card so we have a stronger hand. That's sort of the way I think about it. And some people are just hanging on to their cards with two hands and just won't let them go.
Yeah. And those type of people, even for those people, let's say you're one of those people and you're like, shit, I can't get out of my own way. I don't know why. I keep having the same thoughts. I wake up in the morning and it's always it's the same stuff. I get out of the bed, same style. You know, I have a coffee. I do this. I get pissed off in traffic. My wife drives me nuts. Whatever it is, the boss makes me crazy and I can't turn it off. I can't. How do they really just go, like, take a weekend? The beautiful thing about being an athlete too is we have an off season.
Mm-hmm.
And so that off season, that's when I could reflect. Every year I always like had like a week I would travel by myself out of the country and go reflect and have a good time too. I was single. So I would like a combination fun trip / let's reflect and refocus and really dive in and be honest with myself and see where I'm at in that moment. And there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of ways out there to get in touch with that, not religious, but that spiritual side of things. That is, I know spirituality scares some people, but I'm not talking religion here. I'm talking getting to that inner self. If you're an atheist, that higher self, that going inwards, or whether I don't care what God you believe in, like going to that and just really giving up and saying, I'm open to new experiences and I'm going to go for it.
The podcast, I should mention, Wide Open with Tony Gonzalez. It's available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify as well, and the website, youtube.com/Tony Gonzalez. Shoot him a tweet at TonyGonzalez88. I was discussing this concept with somebody yesterday, and I've always tried to approach life this way. And you tell me if it makes sense to you. I've always had the ability to sort of hover outside of myself and look at myself and see how my interactions are, how I'm behaving, or what's working or what's not working. You can't be inside yourself and get a clear view of what's going on a lot of the time. So if you're driving down the freeway and somebody cuts you off, then it's you they cut off, and now you're pissed at them and you're having a reaction. A better way to be is you're a bird flying over two cars and you're looking down and you're in one of them, but you're not looking at it through the windshield. You're looking through it from up above, and you're able to assess and see what the other person is doing and even see through their windshield. And now you'll see that their kid was crying in the back and they're distracted and they momentarily turned back. And that's when they went into your lane. You're in your lane going, this asshole tried to kill me. But if you look through their window, their windshield of life, you'll see a completely different vantage point. And so before you are triggered by this thing, look at it through their window. And I've often said to people when I said, why is your neighbor pissed? And they'll go, because he's an asshole. And then I'll go, what would he say? What if I said to him, why are you pissed? Would he say, because I'm an asshole? And then the person will always go, well, I borrowed an orbital sander of his, and then it got stolen, and then I haven't replaced it, and that's what I think he's pissed about.
Yeah.
And I go, okay, well, it's not because he's an asshole then. It's because you borrowed his orbital sander and he never replaced it. And I go, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
But it's not because he's an asshole.
Yeah.
So kind of golden rule it.
I love that. In a lot of people, too. But then also you could say that, and I know you're probably good at that because you've practiced this too. Yes. And you have to start practicing. That's another thing. Just start practicing this stuff. Just take it one day at a time and practice. And it takes time. You're not going to just all of a sudden wake up tomorrow and be like, oh shit, the guy cut me off. Oh, it's okay. Maybe he's got the kid screaming in the back.
Right.
It's hard. When the heat is on, your natural self's going to come out. But for me, one of the tricks that I do is every day I wake up in the morning, before I do anything. And if I have to be somewhere, I'll set the alarm for 15 minutes. It only takes me about 15 minutes, but I just keep my eyes closed. I don't even open my eyes up. And I will see my day coming before me. And I did this with football, before the games. I would see every play that I'm going to play in that game or at practice that day. I would see myself interacting. I'd see myself getting my ass kicked on a couple plays, and I'd see myself reacting the way I want it to react. Mm-hmm. And it would be real. This isn't just, positive talk to myself. This is like I'm in the moment, in the future, feeling it. I'm smelling it. I see myself sweating. I'd look up in the crowd. I'd see the crowd yelling for me. I'd see my coach patting me on the ass, on the head, saying, good job. Like, I would get out there and live the experience before it happened. And that's what I do every morning now. Before I knew I was coming on this show, like, I know that I want to be fully present and honest and the best version of myself. I try to see that every morning. And you'd be surprised a lot of the times. And I see myself in traffic. I see myself with my wife, all the married people out there, like the patience that you need for marriage after 13 years, and dealing with four kids. Like, I see myself the way I want to be. And that's something that has really, really helped me. Because then when the moment does come, it's like, I've already been here. It's easy. I got it. Up on TV now, when I do my shows on Sunday for Fox, it's like, there's no fear anymore. And I tell myself, and I feel it. Not do I say I'm fearless. I say that, but then I also feel fearless. Oh, I'm entertaining when I'm in front of the camera. That's what I feel. And whether it's true or not, that's the emotion that you have. I'm a big believer that success, and it goes back to the talent, the big guy who runs fast and strong coming into the NFL, he'll never make it unless emotionally he feels like he belongs there. Like, I am enough. I got this. You have to know that any situation that comes at you, see it before it happens and be prepared for it. It's just a little biohack right there in the morning that I do.
15 minutes, eyes closed. You're awake, but your eyes are closed. How do you balance, and I'm asking for myself, how do you balance, I belong here, I'm the man, as we discussed earlier, with a little bit of running scared, like a little bit of show business is, it's so funny because I go, think about all those people that were big stars or you saw on TV, like when you were younger, growing up, or even 5 years ago, and they're gone. And people go, yeah, like, yeah. And I realize they can't even think of their names. Mm. Like, you can't even think of examples because you've forgotten their name. And these guys were big when you were in high school or college or 10 years ago or whatever it is. And athlete, being an athlete this way too. It's here today, gone tomorrow, fast, real fast. And there's an element of needing to throw track out in front of this train. Like, and part of it is motivated by a little fear. Maybe it's positive or healthy fear, but it's a kind of a, hey man, I got a family and I got a pretty big monthly nut. Like, I got to pedal this bike. Like, I'm not taking weekends and holidays off. Like, I got it. Make some hay while the sun shines. So it's a kind of a balance between confident, feeling like I belong here, feeling like I've earned myself my way here, and an element of I gotta go, man.
Uh-huh.
I gotta go because if I stop for 6 months, I'll be off the team. I'm like, you know, you can get out of show business, just don't do anything for a year and you'll just be gone.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I kind of that fear or that anxiety. Herman Edwards, coach. He said it's not fear, it's anxiety, and there's nothing wrong with little anxiety. That's that was his word for it, because it helps you run faster.
Right.
That anxiety is going to help you get the hell out of the way or make the move. And so the way I look at it is I try to really, and I'm going to go a little hippie here, is my concentration, my goals in life have nothing to do, don't get me wrong, I know I see myself where I want to go. And I'm going that direction. But the most important thing for me is to really find joy in what I'm doing, to find that real peace in what I'm doing, that real happiness. Like I'm right where I'm supposed to be, no matter what. And that's what I'm going after. I'm after an emotion. I'm after a feeling. But I do believe that there's no such thing as status quo. You're either getting better or you're getting worse. And I the analogy I use for that is like a rocket ship going up, you know, to space, and we're going up, and you got the little fire coming out, the gas that's burning, pushing it upwards. You can't ever let that fire go out, because once that happens, it's gonna come to a standstill, and then it's gonna fall back.
Right.
And so you have to constantly keep reevaluating, keep going after your goals. And when I say goals, like I said, it's about relationships. I want the best friendships I can have. I want to have a great marriage. I want to be a good father. And that's a feeling. When you walk in pissed off, you know, you're not the best father you can be. You're not the best husband you can be. And so I try to concentrate on those emotions. And it's kind of like surrender. Some people don't like that word either. I surrender to saying it's going to work out, because I know I got what it takes, and it's always going to work out for me.
How much has football helped in, I mean, there's the teamwork aspect of it, which I just feel like a lot of people, you know, you've caught a lot of passes, but you've done a lot of blocking.
Yeah.
I mean, you may have done more blocking than you've caught passes if you really just take each snap and work it out. Yeah. I don't know. But you are sacrificing for somebody else who's carrying the rock and for the betterment of the team. I love that quality in people. And it's an important quality. But there's another quality that I found very useful from playing a lot of football for myself, starting at a young age. I started at 7. I went for about 10 years. But learning things, memorizing things, techniques, and the snap count, just going to the line every time with the snap count, with the play that you memorize. I feel like I talk to a lot of people or I deal with a lot of people and I go, hey, why didn't you do the X, Y, and Z? I told you. And they go, I don't know. I forgot. And you're like, why didn't you write it down? Or why didn't you study it? Or why didn't you know it? Or why didn't you whatever it? And that ability in football, it's good for all sports, but football specifically really teaches you that discipline. Like, this is your route. Your route is 10 yards and break out, not 14 yards and break out, not banana out off the line of scrimmage. Like, this is, and if not, the ball's not going to be there.
Yeah.
How much has that served you?
I love team sports. I think it teaches kids the value of teamwork, being accountable to each other, going the distance and being there on time when the quarterback's going to throw you the ball, all that stuff. I've carried that over to everything, but it took me a little while because when you're talented and young, that's what happens with these privileged athletes that come in. They think it's all about them. And you see it all the time, even at the pro level. There's guys, I could name them all. Anybody can name them all. There's somewhat selfish players. Odell Beckham, which I've said it on air. Like, guys like Antonio Brown, who's out of the league now because of this attitude. That it's not about you, it's about the team. And when you figure that out, it actually makes everybody better. Knowing that if I do my job, that's why Belichick and the New England Patriots are so good. Because everybody is the same there. Nobody's better and no worse than anybody. Of course, there's a little bit of favoritism for Tom and the stars, I'm sure. But we don't get to our goal unless we're all on the same page. And that's life. That's cooperation. It isn't. And you have to get your head out of your ass sometime when you become, and I'm sure you've dealt with this, when you achieve a certain level of fame and money, that's where I think I go back to those people that you need to surround yourself with people that will tell you the truth and go, hey, you're acting like an asshole right now. And you have to be able to believe them and say, yeah, you know what? You're right. And make the change and say, okay, well, let's get better. Cause I've went through that a lot. In fact, there was a certain part of my career where I was a selfish guy, where after the game, it was like, you know, how many catches did I have? How many yards did I have? And that was kind of more important than winning. And that was when I had the least amount of fun playing too, where I couldn't enjoy myself. I was making the money and I was making the playoff, going to the Pro Bowls, but I should have been a lot better at being a teammate back then.
14 Pro Bowls over here, by the way. Hall of Fame. Let's see, Hall of Fame. Oh, in August, yeah. It's always amazing when I see guys like you and Deion Sanders and stuff, like Hall of Fame guys that seem young, like so young. Like Hall of Fame just feels like I don't know, you picture it in rock and roll. You see these old broken down guys out there and having trouble standing up and playing the guitar and stuff like that. And it's so amazing to see like strong, young by today, by any, just young, physically young guys in the Hall of Fame. It helps to be, you know, inducted in your first year of eligibility. What is it, 5 years after you retire?
Yeah, 5 years. Yep.
I know basketball and Cal and Berkeley and played at Berkeley, and that was a big part of your life. A lot of people, when they have a second sport, one's football and the other's basketball or is baseball, they choose the other sport because it's a safer sport and there's more longevity in it. How is it that you made the decision to do football versus basketball?
It chose me because I loved basketball flat out more than I loved football. And I love football too, but that was my girl. And it kind of just fizzled out for me. It was like a 6'5" power forward. You know, there's been one guy in the history of the NBA. He's a good player, named Charles Barkley, but then that's it. He's the greatest athlete of all time, in my opinion, because he's 6'5", 295 pounds, can, you know, 360 dunk, which is
right.
Which is, nobody does that.
Yeah.
So it's just him. And so for me, it was like, hey, you have a chance to play in the NBA, and you could. I think I could have played in the NBA. I know I could have. I tried out for the Miami Heat with Pat Riley
mm-hmm.
and made the team, the summer league team. After my fifth year in the league, I was having a little contract dispute.
Fifth year in the NFL.
Yeah, I went and tried out for their summer league team. I was like, mm-hmm. all right, well, I'll show you guys. I'll just go to the NBA if you don't want to pay me money. And I made the summer league team. And so I kind of satisfied my curiosity whether or not I could have played. But it was football. You can be a 6'5", tight end, athletic, kind of. Hasn't really been seen before at that position. It was kind of like an easy, not easy. It was a tough one, and I always wondered what could be. But you got to go with that's where it takes a little bit of trust because there are people out there that say screw it, I'm going to go after my dream. That's why we talk about you hear motivational speakers say you got to pursue your dream and you don't let anything get in your way of it and you don't let anything stop you. And it's like, well, I don't know if I agree with that because
I don't agree with it.
Yeah, like sometimes the shit ain't meant to be. You got to shapeshift and go a different direction.
Dr. Drew has always said reality on reality's terms.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, it's true. You have to listen to reality and what you want to do. You know, I've always sort of said like there's what you want to do and what you do or what you can do, and you have to make a decision. And I always sort of, I loved football. I wanted to play football. I was a guy who just loved it. I just loved football more than anything. And I played some baseball, but baseball's like, it's boring, it's for pussies. Football's like, you get to get the uniform. So yeah. Awesome. We get to go hit people and blah, blah, blah. And at some point later in my life, I ran into Thomas Sorta because I tried out some Dodger thing, joke, whatever. But he's like, I could have made you into a Major League Baseball player. And he was serious about it. And maybe it, in football, I had a 0.00% chance of ever doing it. In baseball, maybe I had a 4% chance. But the point is I wanted to do this. And so I put all my energy into this sport when I should have been more realistic and saying, you should think about this sport if you want to play in college or get a yeah. scholarship or what have you. I wasn't realistic about it. Later on, when it came to comedy, I looked at comedy is like saying athletic. You're athletic, but what's your sport? What's your sport? Is it stand up? Is it writing? Is it sketch? Is it directing? Like, what is your sport within this subheading of comedy? And I had to get realistic. Like, I love doing sketch improv comedy, but I was not going to be on Saturday Night Live. I didn't do voices and characters. Like, as much as I love that format, it wasn't going to happen.
Uh-huh.
And so that thing of like, follow your dream. Well, if my dream was be on Saturday Night Live, I'd just be still dreaming about it from an apartment in Van Nuys.
Yeah.
With a piece of shit in the driveway. I got a little more realistic and went, not what you want to do, what you can do.
Uh-huh.
It's still going to be better than roofing.
Absolutely. I'm going to ask you a question about being a stand-up comedian. You've done stand-up a bunch of it,
right? I've done a lot.
A lot of it. To me, I've seen those specials on comedians going across country trying to make it. I think it was called Dying of Laughter. What was your experience like when you... Like, the fearlessness you have to have as a comedian is something I could never, ever do. How are you able to get over that fear of going out there and bombing? Because you have to bomb, isn't it, as a comedian?
Like, yeah, the first thing you do to protect yourself is you speed up. You go, like, I'm going to hurry through this thing. Like, it's you're scared of dead air. You're scared of silence. If you think about all the guys that are out there, and you watch their specials, like if you watch like a Dave Chappelle special, he'll just stop, let it breathe, just let that silence just sort of wash over everybody, totally comfortable and confident, knowing that we're going to now enter the next chapter, the next joke, or the next page of this comedic novel. So the first thing you do when you're inexperienced and you're worried about bombing and you're going to bomb is you actually speed up, which then makes you bomb more. It's kind of like your first date where you're nervous, so you talk more. And the next thing you know, she hasn't said a word and you've been talking the entire time. And it's because you want the date to go well that you're pushing so hard that you're actually forcing the date to not go well because you're trying too hard for it to go well.
Yeah.
So there's a kind of a thing that great baseball players don't grip the bat that tight. You know, they grip it pretty loose.
Like, yeah.
The great boxers don't have their hands held up and clenched fists and elbows. You know, you watch Muhammad Ali and he's kind of bouncing around out there. You know, he's picking his moments and the jab is snapping out, but it's not snapping out from a place of like intensity. It's snapping out from a relaxed place. You know what I mean? So now how do you get relaxed in a boxing ring?
Yeah.
That's the question. And the answer is you spar for 10,000 rounds. Otherwise, you couldn't possibly be relaxed in this boxing ring. And if you watch something like any kind of young boxing or celebrity boxing or whatever it is, what these guys do is they get in the best shape of their lives and then they gas out in the first round. They gas out in the first round because they're so tense.
Yeah.
You know, and with comedy, with boxing, fucking, whatever it is, you got to loosen your grip.
Yeah.
You can't, if a joke bombs, then you can say it bombed or admit it or laugh it off. It's that fear of bombing that speeds everything up and then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You're so worried about bombing, you bomb. You're so worried about dropping the ball, you drop the ball. It's in your head while the ball's in the air. You shouldn't be thinking about dropping it. You should be thinking about making a football move. But instead, you're dropping it because you're thinking about dropping it. I mean, there's a million sports versions of this.
Have you ever been booed off the stage?
I've had things not go well. And it's never as bad as you think it is. It's going to be. Because it just is. It's sort of like, I don't know, everyone has ever been shot. Like when you think about being shot, you go, oh my God, it's the worst thing ever. Most people have been shot. It's like, I felt this warm thing in my abdomen and I looked down and I was covered with blood. Like it's never as bad as what's in your head. It's just, now I'm shot. Now I got to go to an ambulance or whatever. I don't mean shot in the head, but I just mean most people who are shot don't even know they were shot.
Okay.
They just feel like I felt a weird warm thing. And then I look down, there's all this blood on my car seat. And I didn't know what was happening. Like, it's a weird way that humans process things. So, you know, they're not going well. Things aren't going well. You also know that it's not as bad as you thought it would be if you would bomb. And for me, I'm sort of past that point where and you also realize corrective behavior. Like you go, I was on stage last night and I did a joke that normally kills, but it really didn't get a very big laugh.
Yeah.
And I was like, but it's kind of a dirty joke. So I was like, oh, this crowd's a little more conservative or a little less of a dirty joke crowd. So I'll make an adjustment on the fly and do a joke that I know is a little softer and not as dirty and a little more sort of family oriented. And I went right to a joke that I haven't done in 6 months. It was just a sort of, I have twins and here's my joke about having twins and blah, blah, blah. And they immediately laughed. And I was like, okay, that's who you guys are. So you have to kind of take what the defense is giving you sometimes.
Yeah. Good analogy. Because I think, as I'm listening to you talk there, going back to what we were talking about earlier, like what stops a lot of people too is they don't want to get laughed at. They don't want to try something new because what if nobody laughs? What if that's really what life is? What if nobody likes what I'm doing? What if it doesn't work and they're saying, well, screw that. I'm just going to keep staying, you know, in my safe place. Because I can't take that type of rejection.
It's not going to work at the beginning.
Yeah.
Almost anything's not going to work at the beginning, you know? And the thing that's a little liberating, I think, for people is no matter what you feel about bombing or dropping a ball or whatever the example of not excelling is, nobody really cares as much as you think they do. They just don't. They care about them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, how much do you care about a comedian bombing? And if the answer is not that much, well, then that's the answer. That's how much they care about you dropping the ball or me bombing. You know what I mean? Like, first things first, you got to get past this part where everyone is just sitting at the edge of the seat, of their seat, waiting to see what you do next or how you react in this situation. Everybody who's thrown out a horrible first pitch, as I have, goes, oh, my God, the whole world's watching. It's like, they don't care.
Yeah.
They really don't. They may laugh at you or they may say they care. They care as much as you care about them throwing out a bad pitch or them bombing doing stand-up or them dropping a button hook.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't. And if you can put that in your head that no one really cares that much, then you've given yourself the permission to fail while trying.
Yeah. And it's kind of like nobody cares that much. And if I can answer the question going back, like, nobody cares that much. And who gives a shit? If they care anyway. I don't.
That's a good point.
I'm at the point now, you know, as I made this transition from football to being in front of the camera, which is tough. It's every athlete out there wants to do it.
Right.
Whether they believe it or not, because it's hard to just walk away and just say, all right, what do I do now? Okay. Right. And so we do tell them, well, let's go talk about football because that's what I did for a living. But it's not about just going up there and talk. Like, you got to make it entertaining. And I struggled with it for the first couple of years until I got to the point where I had on the football field. It was like, just remember what made you great on that football field was more like nobody cares, like you said. And then who gives a shit? Just go have fun and do your thing. Really, it's that what it's Bill Murray. I forgot what movie it was. It was one of his first movies where he's giving the speech at the camp.
Meatballs.
Was it Meatballs?
Possibly.
Where he was like, it just doesn't matter. And they call it, like, it just doesn't matter. And that's what it is. Like it just doesn't matter. Just live your life and go for it. And who cares?
No,
it'll all work out.
Go back, you know, if you ever see any of those like old timey pictures and everyone's standing there from the 20s and everyone's looking concerned or looking whatever. And you just look at that picture and you go, they're all dead.
Yeah.
At that moment, they had lots of concerns about the picture, or about the business, or about the farm, or about society. Everyone in that picture had a lot of concerns, and it was every bit as real as you are now, because the picture may be in black and white, but their life was in living color, just like ours is. And they're all just gone and no one even knows their name.
Yeah.
And as pessimistic as that sounds, it also should be liberating. It should give you the permission to go out and try and fail, because those people in the picture, some of them tried, some of them excelled, some of them failed, some of them tried and failed and then succeeded, but they're all gone.
Yeah.
I don't even know who they are anymore.
Yeah.
And no one remembers, and everyone is thinking about themselves like we're the last. You know, it's like every religious group predicts the apocalypse on their watch.
Of course.
And it's been 2,000 years and never happened.
Yeah.
But it's a kind of a narcissism. You can free yourself up to kind of go, if I flub this or I fail at that, or I don't, you know, I hit a single instead of a home run, nobody cares. I'll give myself the permission to go do what I want to do.
Yeah.
And it's that way with social media. You know, you hop online, someone's talking shit on Twitter, and you go, oh, this person or that person or these people think. They don't think that much.
Yeah.
Think about as much as you think of them.
Yeah.
How much do you think about them?
None.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah. Never.
All right. So now you're liberated to go out and fail.
Yeah.
Give us, before we let you go, Tony, this has been enlightening. You gave us a life hack about waking up in the morning, carving out 15 minutes, closing your eyes, and really just sort of visualizing the day. Not in a Mary Poppins kind of way, but just in a sort of a positive, here's what I'm going to achieve. I think what a lot of people don't realize is they go, I don't want to make a commitment to have to. What we're talking about is consistency, but not really time.
Mm-hmm.
I told my son the other day when I told him, your New Year's resolution, he's 13, every time I go out and do stand-up for free, you get in that pool. Every day I do stand-up for free, you get in that pool. And he said, well, yeah, but what about like before school? And I said, you know, if you really think about it, You want to go down there, get in that pool, swim to one side and the other, get out, hop out. Get out. You're talking about 4.5 minutes round trip. You really want to, you want to hustle a little bit and do it in three. We're not talking about time.
Yeah.
There is no, I can't, I'm late.
Yeah.
No, no. So you wake up, it's 3 minutes. You really want to do it. You want to lay in bed and visualize for 10 or 15 minutes. That's all. I'm not talking about 2 hours worth of going to the mountaintop and meditating with the yogi. Little things. The things, kind of thing we're talking about, the cold shower.
Yeah.
That's 45 seconds.
Yeah.
Just put on cold and blast yourself.
Yep.
That's not a time thing. That's a consistency thing.
Yeah.
Do you have any other life hacks, so to speak, that the meditation with the eyes closed and the bed and the visualization, do you have something else that our listeners, my listeners, could take away from this conversation?
Sure, sure. I do that one in the morning. And by the way, when I say 15 minutes, I do at least 15 minutes. Sometimes it goes more because it's fun, by the way. This is a fun exercise and it's supposed to be that way. And you feel those feelings, like I said. It's not just you see it, but also make sure that you're feeling it like you're in it already. I do it before I go to sleep as well, too, about 3 or 4 minutes because then I'm tired and I go to bed. Sometimes I'll doze off while I'm doing it, which is a great way to go to sleep. It helps you relax. On the way over here in the car, when I'm driving by myself, that's something a lot of people do. You're in a car every day. When I'm at a stoplight, I always try to look at myself and say, I use the word present. And when I say present, I'll take 10 seconds to notice what I'm smelling, 10 seconds to notice all the colors around me, 10 seconds to just see the people in the other car next to me and to try to connect to the moment.
Right.
And I do that a lot. And when I first
physically say present,
physically
verbally
say present,
present out loud,
present out loud,
to pull you into where you're at, not having you drifting around,
not having me drift
thinking
around
about what's going on in Iran.
Yeah. And yeah, you get rid of all the thoughts, just present in the moment. And then bringing that center of joy and that love and that peace and that excitement and that fearlessness and that ass kick. I take myself to that emotionally, artificially. Like, I don't need a thing to stimulate me to feel that way. It's like, I'll do that just because.
And I find physically say the word present.
Physically say the word
present. Catch it all the time.
And take those 10 seconds. Like, 10 seconds, notice it around. Okay, what am I looking at? Oh, the colors, the tree, that car. Look at that car. Like, really. And you can say it out loud, too.
Mm-hmm.
And what does it smell right now? Oh, what am I seeing? I'm seeing this microphone. Oh, this can, this pin. Like, I'm present right now. This is where I'm at. And you'll feel like a sense of aliveness.
Right.
Your body will wake up.
And I love it.
And it feels good.
And so basic. And really, all this stuff we're talking about, it's about consistency. It's not really about altering your life.
No.
It's just about being present enough to be consistent with it. Tony Gonzalez, Wide Open with Tony Gonzalez, available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify as well, and the website, youtube.com/Tony Gonzalez. And shoot him a tweet at Tony Gonzalez 88. Tony, this has been wonderful. I hope you'll come back and share more of these life hacks and philosophies with us.
Sure thing, bud. I've been with you since Love Lines.
If you ever need a guest on your show, I'm wide open.
I would love to have
you. We'll make that happen. So we'll take a break. We'll come back with news right after this.
Adam Carolla is unprepared. Live all winter long.
Well, Kimmel Dad, Adam began on stage in free ball. Totally unprepared with no material at all. He's gonna go.
He's gonna go.
He doesn't know.
He doesn't know.
What the hell he's gonna say until you tell him so.
He's gonna go.
He's gonna go.
He doesn't know.
He doesn't know.
Until you give him an idea.
Living out a ball. Get your ticket for the show. What word awaits? He's gonna go.
He's gonna go.
Adam Carolla is unprepared at the Pabst Theater in Milwaukee on January 24th and in Chicago at Park West on January 25th. Get prepared for Adam Carolla is unprepared by getting your tickets at adamcarolla.com.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Need news with Gina Grad.
the news with Gina Grad.
So day two of Harvey Weinstein's sex crimes trial in New York got started Tuesday with the judge yelling at the former movie mogul for using his cell phone, according to Deadline.
Ooh.
A day out, yeah.
You know, it struck me that this is a, there's a, if you think about, I think about myself all the time. Like there's stuff I want or don't want or whatever, but I don't have time to really take to the streets and protest and do a lot of stuff like that. Yeah. Like, I'd like to loot, but I'm at work. You know what I mean? But if you're at home,
we should get that bumper sticker.
It's easier to loot if you're kind
of
hanging.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
Have a time.
And poor Weinstein. Poor, poor dear man.
Finally, someone's taking up his cause.
He has a lot of folks that are his victims. They got time to come on down and meet Rose McGowan in the center of town and have at it.
Yeah, get your poster board, your stick.
They ain't Canada working. They ain't doing their home, and they're ready to fucking take vengeance.
Yeah.
And they're ready. But, I mean, it's that crew, that is a crew that is always available and ready to fucking stand behind people and give you daggers, man.
That's right.
Oh, God.
Well,
I'm so glad Weinstein, he was such a douche.
I listened to the Catch and Kill podcast, the Ronan Farrow podcast, and this season is just about this. And there is a lot of crazy stuff in there. You think you know everything, but you really don't. It, like, he was followed by these, you know, whatever.
Well, but, here's an interesting thought. All dudes are perverts in the sense.
Leave it at that.
Listen, you know, you think, you go, that guy, he wears funny glasses. He's not, whatever. He gets boners and he looks into everything. You've heard enough stories about enough people and what they're into. All guys like getting laid. All guys like young actresses. All guys, blah, blah, blah. All, that's everybody.
That's a given.
That's a given. Now, most guys, or many guys, are good guys. And so they have to balance that. Here's what I want versus being a good guy. No bigger horn dog than Dr. Drew.
Come on.
Oh, yeah. He's a horny dude. Speaking of horn dog, you know where he'd like to put his corn dog?
I don't.
In your mustard.
Oh, my God.
That's right.
Thanks for saying ketchup.
Are you talking about Lord Jeff himself?
Let's hope it's not ranch.
Yeah.
The point is this.
I see somebody about that.
The point is, he's a horny dude. He's horny, man.
The idea of that is so funny to me.
He was, I mean, he was telling me his wife was blowing him in his car when he was driving home the other night. Like, I was like, from
old. Why ain't you got no play, playa?
From Old Town. Like, you couldn't even wait to get to your house? Fine.
Old Town. It's 3 minutes away.
I know. That's what I mean. So, my point is this. But he has to balance that against being a good guy.
Got it.
Now, Harvey Weinstein is a horn dog and a bad guy.
Yeah, and a predator.
Yeah, and Bill Cosby is a horn dog and a bad guy.
Right.
And so when you get, everyone's has the default horn dog base, horn dog and good guy, that's a little more of an Al Franken area.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Horn dog and bad guy, now you got predator.
Right. That's. Thank you for breaking it down so so succinctly.
Well, you look at it this way. Like, everyone's horny. Everyone likes a hot 23-year-old. Everyone, you know, when Gwyneth Paltrow comes walking in a room, she's 22, all guys just want to screw her. But it's the bad guys who do the, tell my wife and whatever and meet me and if you want this role.
Yeah.
So it's not the horny part. It's the bad part.
Right.
Don't be a player hater.
He's a bad dude.
Right. Well, they even have one episode is fully devoted to Umbra Gutierrez. She was the one that was all wired up. And all we knew about her was she was just some random model with an accent, and we. But really, interviewing her, it was very interesting. So, if you want to go a little layer deeper on that, I'd recommend the show.
I know John Max is a writer and probably not a producer involved with the cameras and directing all that stuff, but I did notice there were several Harvey Weinstein jokes and references. No cutaways to Quentin Tarantino. Kind of his you know his number one recruit draft pick.
Interesting.
Probably not a coincidence.
I was thinking about, you know who got Me Too'd and evidently was legitimately Me Too'd, but kind of slid out at night? Tavis Smiley.
What?
I do kind of remember something. Tavis Smiley was on TV every night. I mean, Tavis Smiley was.
No, I know. A big guy. I didn't know anything happened.
He's
with Tavis
gone,
Smiley.
Daddy. What? He is gone.
I did not notice.
Yeah, he just kind of slipped away.
And he was like, he was a good guy, beloved, nice guy.
He had a little Black Allen going in him, like, I'm going to portray this
and
character
did.
That really cares yeah. about everything all the time.
So that same Smiley.
Mike just sent me an article on him where it's like, you can look it up, Maxipata, but Tavis is done.
Wow.
See, for every one that you've heard of, mm-hmm. there's 11 that you go, what
quietly,
happened to Tavis Smiley? Like, he's not on anymore. He's not on NPR, whatever
right.
whatever he was on.
Public
he's gone. Radio. He's gone.
Speaking of which, where's James Franco been?
He was just in something.
He was?
I just saw him in something.
Mm. Okay. Like,
wondering
if he'd been
IMDb.
Around. Okay. So here's what happened inside the courtroom. A day after Judge James Burke agreed to allow Weinstein to remain free on bail, which was $5 million, by the way, even as new charges were filed against him in L.A., he issued a stern warning after seeing him holding his phone. Burke told him to put the phone away and then asked if Harvey really wanted to end up in jail for the rest of his life over this stupid cell phone. The judge also rejected Weinstein's lawyer request to delay the trial in the wake of the new rape charges filed Monday and plans to move ahead with jury selection.
Mm.
And did you see him all like basically in an exoskeleton?
Yeah.
I mean, just the walker and I mean, just really looking pretty rough.
Yeah. New rape. Even worse than new coke. Hey, Max Pata, what did Smiley, Mike sent me those. He just sent me a note that said, you're not producing correctly. what it was what?
So the way you want Smiley's allegations,
yeah.
right? Okay. In one allegation in a report released by Deadline, it's a nearly 500-page report, a former worker said that Smiley allegedly asked her to lunch a few days after she was hired. While at lunch, he allegedly asked the woman if she had a boyfriend, and when they were driving back to the office, he asked what her bra size was. The woman claimed that he told her he would take her to a Victoria's Secret at the Grove to buy you some stuff, some panties. The accuser laughed, but claimed that Smiley insisted and then said, if you don't tell me what bra size you wear, I will make you walk back to the office. The woman also claimed that Smiley left a message on her cell phone voicemail telling her she looked so good while wearing a pink dress. And then two other women claimed they had sexual relationships with him.
The note Mike sent is that one like producer came to the house and the other one was naked in his bed. And he was like, let's get busy, the three of us.
Wow.
Yeah. I think it was a producer because he said that the heading was, you're not producing correctly. You're standing there with fucking Nate and Willie T. Rich.
Yeah, Chris, you're the cost of entry.
That's right.
Who was the other one? The Let's Get Crazy.
Todd O'Brien.
Thank you.
That's a classic.
That's the best voicemail.
Yeah, that's why all phones should have breathalyzers built into them.
he was
blown like a 2.7. He shouldn't have been making that phone
that
call.
Poor.
It was a crazy
guy.
Call.
You're right.
Yeah.
So, Brian, you referenced this.
I was loaded out of my mind.
You referenced this yesterday, and it is in the news cycle still, so I figured we'd bring it up. Not all of George Lopez's jokes have gone over well with the audience, especially his jokes about Trump, and the audience is the Secret Service this time. So over the weekend, an Iranian official eulogizing slain military general Qasem Soleimani reportedly put an $80 million bounty on Donald Trump's head. Lopez commented on an Instagram post, quote, "We'll do it for half." According to TMZ, Lopez could expect a visit from federal agents
Let's
to discuss whether he was
taxpayer
threatening.
Taxpayer money visiting George Lopez.
Oh, there is a call to action on this one. Everybody's tweeting, you got to go get him. But as Brian brought up, meanwhile, the comparison Brian was alluding to yesterday was 2007 footage of Ted Nugent telling Barack Obama to suck on a machine gun during a concert. This is what happened then.
I was in Chicago last week. I said, hey, Obama, you might want to suck them on these, you punk.
Holding up two machine guns.
You know,
that's
rip
shot.
He's a piece of shit, and I told him to suck at my machine gun. Let's hear it for him.
Listen. We got to get James Woods back on Twitter. All this Twitter talk. I miss the man.
What was
his
bio?
Has it been a year? Over a year?
Feels like a long time, man.
Sonny misses the man.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I just know that world peace is possible because when all the fires were raging in California, Alyssa Milano and James Woods put down their insults and got together to get those horses off the ranch.
That's what we need. Yeah.
That's right. Oh, there he is.
Mm-hmm.
Verified account for James Woods. I have no other Twitter account, no Facebook, nor any Gab account. Those are all phony accounts impersonating me. All right. Now we know.
Boring.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Cool. What's James? What's he doing? I mean, is he acting? We got to get him in here. We should get him in here.
That'd be great.
He's got to be. What's he live in? Malibu? He's got to live out. He'll live out here somewhere, right?
I don't think Malibu. I mean, he hates his neighbors.
Mm.
Wouldn't he?
Yeah. I mean, him and Babs and Cher.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're probably right. Probably puts back a few with Brolin, though.
You know, oh, Brolin, that'd be great.
When Babs lets Brolin out of the house, he gets in a fucking Prius, pulls down the street, climbs out of it, gets into a Ford Raptor, does a fucking donut, and goes over to Woods' house and tosses back a few shots.
That's right.
That's what I think that'd Brolin's doing. Yeah.
You should get in on that.
I should. Drives a Raptor. How great is it? I mean, you think about this. Like, you're doing this. It was sort of like, God, what's his name? Phoenix,
Joaquin.
Joaquin was like saying, hey, if you're going to do this whole climate thing, don't take the private jet all over the place.
Walk.
You know what I mean?
And
the fact that we're trying to get this thing going and, you know, Barbara Streisand's, if she's not on the tip of that climate change spear, she's near to it. The guy she marries, the guy she's been married to, said to me, I didn't want the 2019 Ford Raptor, which is a Baja trophy truck that you can drive on the street with, you know, 18 inches of suspension in the travel. There's no reason to own that car anytime. He said, I had to buy the 2017. It still got the V8 in it because the 2019 got the V6 in it. And I'm not burning enough fossil fuel. Now, he drives that to Malibu where he lives with her. So how are we gonna convert the fine people of India or China?
Yeah.
We can't get Brolin converted.
He's right there.
He's right
there. Low hanging fruit.
He's in the belly of the beast.
Yeah.
You know?
That might just be a street cred thing.
Yeah.
He's an everyman. He's salt of the earth. Rugged.
He goes downstairs. He goes to the mall.
Yep.
Goes to the TGI Fridays.
Gets a Wetzel's pretzel.
Gets a Wetzel's pretzel. Babs is shopping across the way. Gives her a thumbs up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
All right. Sorry. Oh, do you have more smiling? Or do you have the ones that Mike sent me and made me laugh?
I'm still looking for. It's a really long report. But I'm not seeing any production notes or anything like that.
The latest batch is... The producer or the somebody came to his house, and the other one was already in his bed.
Oh, my.
And he wanted the three to do a little session.
Sure. On another note, James Woods sold all of his L.A. properties in 2018.
Not surprising at all. Is he like a Plainwood guy?
Yeah, he's in Montana.
Yeah, he had a place in Rhode Island at that time, too, but the report says he was looking to sell that as well, so I don't know where he is. Mm.
Wow. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Where in the world is James Woods?
Mm.
Well, Netflix has released the first official trailer for its documentary series on Aaron Hernandez.
Ooh.
On Tuesday morning, the streaming service, dropped the main preview for Killer Inside, The Mind of Aaron Hernandez. It's a three-part series which premieres...
Should have gone the football pun.
Mm.
Killer Inside? That could be anybody.
Mm-hmm. What would you prefer? Something about a gridiron?
Tight end or something like that?
It's going to give people a closer look at the murder case that made headlines everywhere. The trailer for the docuseries, viewers are shown old home videos of Hernandez, exclusive courtroom footage. And I don't know if you remember, I listened to the podcast series called Gladiator about him, and there seems to be some nice crossover and some really good details. Here's about 2 minutes of the trailer if you just want to get a taste of it.
No one has allegedly murdered two people and then played an entire season as a professional athlete.
I can't wait to be free.
I'm Aaron Hernandez from Bristol, Connecticut. I play at Bristol Central High School.
Aaron Hernandez was a different level of athlete.
He was kind.
He wasn't someone who picked on other kids.
He's one of the best players in America. Get him the ball.
The Patriots reward him with a $40 million contract.
Oh, wow.
Aaron Hernandez was a ticking time bomb.
the why is the story here.
He was out to prove something, like a tough guy all the time.
He had a second residence,
the flop house. He had trouble with drugs, with guns.
Aaron was absolutely operating on the edge.
New England Patriot Aaron Hernandez was arrested this morning at his residence.
Aaron was accused of murdering Odin Lloyd, his future brother-in-law.
How can an individual who has everything get involved in something like this?
I was the happiest little kid in the world, and you fucked me up.
I ain't living with that.
You did! I had nobody. What do you think I was gonna do? Become a perfect angel?
Say angel.
Aaron was extremely terrified of his father. Violent outbursts were not uncommon in the Hernandez home. Aaron had a history of concussion-related injuries.
At the drop of a hat, he became angry and violent.
All right.
Had everything.
I'll be watching.
That's the end. Yeah.
That's all I got
and
to say.
Remember, it wasn't just that murder case. There was those two other dudes.
Yeah. Oh,
so this is going to be, I think it'll be a good series. I mean, hopefully they'll uncover a lot of stuff that's still very mysterious about this dude.
The moral of the story is you are who you are, and fancy cars and contracts and houses and stuff like it doesn't change mean people or violent people or any whatever.
Yeah, it gives you more access.
Happy people are happy, whatever. Mm-hmm. Unhappy people are unhappy in this. We have this society which is built around once you get that house and once you get that car and once you get that thing or that ability to go on vacation, then X, Y, and Z. It's not that. Right. It's just you are who you are. If that's who you are, that's who you are. Yeah. It's like suggesting my dog Phil would be different if we put him in a smaller house or a bigger house, or he would just be the same creature wherever he is. It's not. We put way too much of an emphasis on that, and we also, as a society, you know, we do a lot of like these people are going without. I know plenty of people that don't have money who are happy, and I know plenty of people who have money who aren't happy. There's no straight line between having things and being happy.
And as it pertains to the Aaron Hernandez's of the world, a lot of times that money and that access and that fame and that whatever, that enabling can exacerbate. You know what I mean? Like, to think about the position to murder people if he hadn't been a multimillionaire?
The worst.
Possibly, but less likely.
Possibly, but here's the problem. The problem is once you get that money, and you're still exactly the same inside at night. You still feel unhappy. You still feel angry, or you still feel whatever that is, whatever that thing is. Once you get the money, you realize it can't be solved, or you think it can't be solved.
That's supposed to be the answer.
There is a part of being poor and being unhappy and going, yeah, I'm unhappy because I don't have air conditioning or whatever. But if I got air conditioning, then I would be a different person. Most people get to have that as a sort of perpetual carrot and a stick out in front of them. But once you get a hold of the carrot and you don't like it, you realize you're not happy, that's tough. We have Smiley's threesome story.
Yes.
Breaking. So,
couple more allegations. One
just
is a woman claimed Smiley grabbed her butt during a photo session and purposely made contact between his penis and her buttocks. And then one woman claimed that when she visited Smiley's house, he opened the door and he was not wearing pants. He later asked her to have a threesome with him and his executive producer, who the report claimed was seen naked in Smiley's bed with a frightened look.
Oh, God.
Frightened.
That changes things.
The guy's name is Smiley.
Yeah. I prefer
Guy Smiley from the Muppets.
Now, you can argue I answer the door with my pants off all the time.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I roll.
Ask the Grubhub guy, ask the Sparklets guy, ask the meter reader.
But you scoot them out, you don't invite them in.
I will bring in 110 witnesses right now who will testify.
If I'm in a courtroom and you can prove to me that you exclusively answer the door without pants, then I'm going to let this one slide by. Yeah. I suspect you saw her coming up the walkway and removed your pants.
That's more likely.
But if we can get the mailman.
Yeah. Or subpoena the Ring video doorbell.
Yes.
Yeah, if we can get a whole bunch of that footage of you just answering the door with your pants down, like, flopping. Hi, Jehovah's Witness, I got to watch there. What? Then I will move past that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Throw the whole case out.
So I work. Well, at least that.
At least that portion
of it. Yeah, I don't know how we're going to get the producer in the producer in the bedroom.
Yeah,
but that's
frightened.
The frightened look.
I don't know about the frightened look. This is like a lot of speculation there. Most gals I've had sex with had a frightened. They were concerned. They were concerned.
They were cautious.
They were cautiously concerned. All right, let's bring it home.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Mayor of Zero Fucksville. Gina Grad. That was the news with Gina Grad.
Well, last but not least, Geico. Everyone's got the to-do list. How about you add, save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance? You don't have to go anywhere. Just go to geico.com. 15 minutes could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Take that extra money. Put it in your pocket. Buy some pants so you can answer the door. Go to geico.com.
There's mail piling up on the porch.
15 minutes. You could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance at geico.com. And go to CorollaNewsletter.com and sign up. And we may see you at the big game at the warehouse with all the celebrities and the race cars coming up. Also, tonight we're going to be at the Montauban Theater in L.A. seeing Shelby American.
Are we all going to be there?
I'm all going to be there.
Yeah. I'm going to try my best.
Hope all everyone's right. going to be
See
there.
There.
A lot of Shelby guys and lots of folks from the movie, from Ford v. Ferrari, the actual people that were portrayed there. And go to AdamCarolla.com for live events. Milwaukee, Chicago's coming up, Cleveland, Indy, and all that as well. Go to AdamCarolla.com for tickets for all that stuff. Until then, I want to thank John Max and Tony Gonzalez for coming in here. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla for John and Tony and Gina and Bald. Say, mahalo.
If you don't tell me what bra size you wear, I will make you walk back to the office.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave a voicemail at 888-634-1744. For tickets and info on everything, go to AdamCarolla.com.